Today's podcast is brought to you by LootCrate.com. Save 10% on any new subscription at trylootcrate.com/picturelock. Enter promo code BRIDGE10 for 10% savings. You're listening to WERALP Arlington 96.7 FM. Welcome to another episode of the world-famous award-winning Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, filmmaker, film festival director, film critic, and lover of film and TV. You can find all the back episodes and so much more at picturelockshow.com. Now, Transformers The Last Night comes out this weekend. You can head over to picturelockshow.com/new releases to get my review of the film. Regardless, be sure to check out picturelockshow.com for movie reviews, news, and interviews. This week on the show, my mom came in town, so we took some time to sit down and talk about film, life, and our bond over movies. You'll get the scoop. No embarrassing stories, though. Or are there? That's all ahead on Picture Lock.
Hey, y'all. This is Otessa Goddard, creator of Orange Juice and Bishop's Garden and Lemma, and you are listening to Picture Lock.
Hi, I'm Kimberly Skirm from Kimberly Skirm Casting and Women in Film and Television International, and you're listening to Picture Lock.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, and this week I have a very special guest. My mom's in town, so I figured it would be good to go ahead and sit her down, have her on the show, talk film, and maybe ask some questions to figure out when I started to enjoy film. So, Mom, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. All right, Mom, so you probably heard the show. You know, the first question I always start out with is, when did you fall in love with film?
When did I fall in love with film? I think I was about 8 years old, and my uncle Walter was in the Navy during the Vietnam War, and he came home on leave, and he got all of his nieces and nephews together, and he took us to the movies. And we went to see The Love Bug, you know? The Love Bug movies? About the Volkswagen, the car?
It was real? Is that the
yes.
one?
Yes!
Yeah.
It was a real movie.
I mean, the Volkswagen was a real, like, it came to life. Is
yes,
that right?
Yes, it talked.
Okay.
So we went to see the movie, and I think it was the experience. It was the love that he had for his nieces and nephews to take all of us, and I mean, there were a bunch of us. He bought us all popcorn and the candy, and we were together. It was a family thing, and we enjoyed the movies, and ever since then, I loved movies.
Okay. See, ladies and gentlemen, I didn't even know this story. I knew this was going to be a good idea. Man, that's really awesome. I do think that is part of the great thing about movies is that when you go as a collective and you go into the theater, especially with family, like, you know, whenever family comes into town, and then, you know, okay, what do we want to do? Let's go check out the latest movie. And then you can talk about it afterwards. But obviously that was a big sign of love to take everybody out. So that's really cool. All right. So one of the questions that I had wanted to ask you was, when did you notice that I fell in love with film? Because sometimes I can't really pinpoint when it happened. I mean, I think the earliest films that I remember seeing was Beauty and the Beast and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But I wonder, as my mom, did you notice, okay, this kid has an affinity for film TV?
Yes, and it was a gradual thing for me too, to watch this happen. But you were the type of son that whenever we said, what do you want for your birthday? I want to go to the movies. When you were off on summer vacation or you had extra time at home, what did you do? You watched the same movies over and over again. I think you knew Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4, and however many more there are, you knew them by heart. I also remember, what was the movie with, it wasn't Bruce Lee, but it was about the dragon?
Enter the Dragon.
Enter the Dragon?
No. It's The Last Dragon. I was just listening to that.
The Last Dragon, The Last Dragon. I mean, I could walk in the room, you know, it would be quiet and I'm bringing laundry in and there you were on the floor watching that movie again. And it dawned on me, this kid likes movies.
Mm.
You always were the one that had the movie camera in your hand, the taking family movies. And so I started to make that connection. And when you decided to start studying in earnest about film, then I said, yeah, I was right. He loved movies.
You know, it's interesting because I think for me, knowing now that how much I love it and enjoy it, it's always interesting to go back. And I saw when Joe came, I was the one that had the video camera. And I said, wow, to myself, I was just thinking, wow, I did always want to like hold the camera and do that. I wish I had been more astute as the, hey, Joey, Ben, Mike, let's go make a movie outside. But, you know, that's all right. So, you know, I think you've always been attracted to the arts, to drama as well. Was, you know, film something that you enjoyed or tried to do when you were younger? I obviously know that you were a speaker and things like that. And then you went to get your master's in performing arts at theater. Correct. So
drama and theater for young audiences.
Yes. So how has that played a part in your life?
Well, I can remember even when I was in second grade, the first play that I was in. And I remember that I was a traveler in this play. I think it was called Three Travelers. And I talked to my mom, and I wanted to have the perfect props, so we went and bought a little suitcase, and just how I wanted to wear my hair. And I remember practicing my lines and wanting to do them really well. And when my little group did their performance, because we had a large class and every three or four people had their own play they were in, we got a lot of applause, and I like that. I like knowing that I could make people happy, and I felt that I did a great job with my lines, and I spoke well, and I don't know why that memory stands out to me.
No, it's interesting because I don't know if you know this, but this is, I've said this on the show before. My first memory of knowing, like, I enjoyed acting and things like that was Ms. Shetsley. A kindergarten playing the role of Toto, because it's just like what you said. As you remember, they switched me into Toto like the day of, and I had no idea what the lines were, but I did kind of remember that Toto barked at certain points from, you know, just as we would rehearse for the play. And so when I did it and then the whole crowd laughed, that to me, as, you know, a 5-year-old, I was like, whoa, like this, that's kind of powerful, you know? And so for me, it's kind of the same thing where you do kind of get that high of performing, but I think it's not just performing, it's the connection that you have with the audience. Exactly. You know, like, you know that they're in tune to what's going on, and you're in tune to the fact that, you know, they're really into it.
Mm-hmm. You're all having this one experience together, and you saw that you played a very important part and their enjoyment of that experience.
Right, which is a cool thing. All right, so Mom, what are some, and we're gonna talk about It's a Wonderful Life in a little bit, because, and I'll definitely break down why I wanna talk about that. But what are some standout films that have had an impact on your life over the years?
I think the first film that comes to mind was a made-for-TV miniseries, and I was in high school at the time, and it was called Roots. It changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
And not just my life, I mean, at that time in history in our country, I think it shook up the nation. Every night, everyone was in front of the TV to watch the next segment.
Mm.
And people were talking about it. And I happened to have a high school ethnic studies teacher who had been teaching us all these things that whole year. And so I knew what was coming, but then to see it in action, not just to hear about it in a book, but to watch someone being beaten or sold or torn away from their family, even though I had a teacher who had taught me all the history, it's something about a movie. When you can see it happening, it just grabs every part of your emotions. It grabs at your heart. It leaves you with a mental image
right.
that you can't forget.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you said that because I recently went to the Define American Film Festival here in Charlotte. And the founder, Jose Antonio Vargas, he was saying how film is an empathy machine. Now, this didn't really necessarily come from him, but Roger Ebert said that. And so you're right. I think that a lot of times with films, they can speak to people in a way in which a letter doesn't quite get across, you know, the same thing. So I find that interesting, and I know you wanted to say something else about kind of roots in the time, what was going on in America. As you were speaking, I was also thinking about how you and Dad used to have me and Michael watch Eyes on the Prize films. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's interesting with the connection with roots and those videos, because honestly, that was when I first learned about Emmett Till. And honestly, that the footage, I was so young, like Emmett Till scared me. Like I had nightmares from that.
And rightly so.
Yeah, exactly. But like you said, it's that image that you cannot unsee.
Exactly. And just going back to roots, some of the things that happened just in the community, everybody was on edge. And I can remember my grandmother telling me this story about how she went to the mall and she had my cousin Sharonda, who was a little girl at the time, with her. And they were sitting in the mall area just waiting for my aunt to pick them up. And I guess there was a white family next to them. And a little white girl came up to my grandmother and said, "Who is this girl with you? Is her name Kizzy? Can she be my slave?" And my grandmother was so angry, you know, that she just, you know, said a few words, but controlled herself. But it just made, I mean, everyone was watching it. Everyone was on edge. And it was a tense time in our history because the truth was being told. Mm. And it was being told through film.
Mm. So, you know, take me there now. I know you might not want to give dates, but like what this is circa when?
1976, 77.
Okay. That's interesting. So this is the first time that this had actually been broadcast.
Exactly.
Which is interesting now that, you know, we have TV shows like Underground, and this isn't, you know, this is not a uncommon thing to see. Yet at the same time, I do think it's interesting when you talk about slavery films and TV shows, how sometimes, I don't know, for me, it's sometimes it can be hard to watch. You know, we think about 12 Years a Slave that came out
right.
and, you know, won a few years ago. I think it can be, sometimes it can be well done, and then sometimes it can be melodramatic. And so I think it has its place in definitely helping us to remember what happened and to be confronted with it, because I think sometimes we like to sweep things under the rug and move forward. And it's not that we need to bring it back up in a way that we're lingering on it.
Exactly.
But just to, as you were saying, this happened. This is reality. This is how we've gotten to where we are.
Exactly. But once again, your experience is it has been common for you to see people who look like you and these experiences being shared in film. But for my generation, that was the first time that had ever happened. I came up and I started to see the first of many firsts. You know, when the movie came out recently, The Help. You know, once again, I can think of my grandmother because she was the help. And sitting in that movie, just crying tears, because I really got a chance not to hear it necessarily from my grandmother's mouth, but to watch it and go, oh my goodness, my grandmother went through that. And of course, she had been deceased for a while, but I shed tears for her and had so much more respect for her after seeing that movie.
I think this is really interesting because, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of your generation versus my generation, right? So, and I've noticed this about myself, and I could be the only one, but at the same time, I got a feeling that at least for, you know, my my generation.
Take your time, son.
Yeah. I'm going to leave that in there. For my generation, millennials, I think we have a lack of appreciation, a lack of gratitude, because we didn't have to necessarily go through that. And it's interesting because now, you know, me and Alex having kids, I can see how, like, you can easily be like, oh, you're so grateful, or, you know, in some ways, because you guys worked hard for us to get where we are, we work hard to make sure that they have an even better life. And so it's not necessarily their fault because that's what they were born into. They just don't know about the struggle that came beforehand. So in the same way, that can apply to my generation. You don't really feel the struggle that came beforehand because you didn't live it. You know, at least for my parents were the college students, right? So that's not uncommon for me. But maybe for you, it wasn't as common. I say all that to say, when I watch a film like The Help, sometimes I feel like, oh no, not another portrayal of, you know, the maids or, you know, slaves, etc. But I found that interesting that you had such a deeper connection to it. And so I want to explore that a little bit, you know, just in terms of my great-grandmother, your grandmother. What was that like, kind of being in the house as a kid and seeing her be the help?
Well, it wasn't necessarily that I saw it, but I saw it through the stories my mother told me. And I can remember my mother saying that my grandmother would come home and start cooking dinner for the family. And when everything was being prepared, she might have someone come knock on the door and say, hey, Miss So-and-so needs you to come back because they're having a fish fry tonight and, you know, she needs you to watch the baby. And my grandmother having to, you know, stop what she was doing for her family to go take care of someone else's. I also saw it in my life. I never understood why every Saturday morning we had to get up and shine every little figurine in the shadow box and clean everything just so. But it affected my grandmother, and my mother told me that's why my grandmother wanted to make that migration north to earn a better living for her family. But I tell you what, she saw some things when she was being the help, and my grandmother had more furs in her closet and diamonds in her jewelry boxes than anyone I ever knew at the time. It gave her something to reach for, something she wanted to have for her family. And my mom talks about the first time they bought a family car. And it was a little white special. I can remember riding in that car, but... So it wasn't all bad when you stop and think about it. Gave her dreams, what she wanted to achieve and to have for her family. But it really helped me understand her a lot more.
I appreciate you sharing that. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with my mom. she's in town, so I thought this would be a great time to actually talk about film and, you know, learn some things, which I'm obviously doing, getting a little family history lesson. So this is awesome. You know, so as you were talking about, you know, your grandmother and how, you know, she was able to strive for something greater. I think that's really interesting because I kind of find myself in that same situation now with kids in terms of how, you know, I really want to work hard, more so for, I think, financial freedom to be able to spend more time with the family, with the kids and things like that. But then also when you're able to be financially independent and things like that, then you can actually focus on the things you're passionate about.
Exactly.
And I know some people are fortunate enough to work, you know, at a job that, hey, if they weren't getting paid, they'd still do it. I think for the majority of Americans, you know, you might be doing something that you enjoy doing, but it's not necessarily your passion. So kind of getting to that point where you can be working for your passion, I think is interesting. That this is not even talking about film. It's just a thought that I had. Okay, so I wanted to explore one of my favorite films of all time, and I know this is one of yours, if not the number one.
It's still number one.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
It's a Wonderful Life is very special to me, mainly because I just remember as a kid growing up, we would always watch this film at Christmas time. It's directed by Frank Capra. It came out in 1946, starring the great James Stewart,
the greatest,
Donna Reed. And you know, as a kid, we watched the film, and you would watch it like numerous times at Christmas time because it would come on a lot. But I knew this was a very special film to you because you loved it so much. But then it just started seeping into me where I memorized lines whether I wanted to or not. But this was a film that once I got older, I understood how special it was, because it's a great story.
It is great storytelling.
It has a great life lesson. And Frank Capra was the man, especially when it comes to films like this. And so I kind of wanted to explore It's a Wonderful Life a little bit, you know, find out why it's so special to you. Mm-hmm. And then we were going to just analyze like a couple of scenes, maybe your favorite scene, my favorite scene. And then I think we have a mutual favorite that, I always quote to people, but go ahead, Mom. Why did you enjoy It's a Wonderful Life so much?
I enjoyed that movie. And Kevin, I have to correct you. Not only did we watch it at Christmas time, we watched it all through the year. Because back then, Turner Classic Movies would show it throughout the year. It would be, you know, June 2nd, and it's on TV. Mm. And I would always find whenever it was coming on, and I'd turn it on and watch it. And eventually, you know, I bought a copy of it. But why? Because bottom line, it has the best message ever. We are here for a purpose, and you take yourself out of the equation, you're not there, life is totally different for many people. Mm-hmm. And it shows you how important you are as an individual, how wonderful your life really is if you stop to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the synopsis, for those who haven't seen It's a Wonderful Life, I suggest you go check it out. You can watch it on Amazon. You know, I'm sure it's got to be streaming elsewhere, but you could definitely buy it, you know, purchase it online. This is a great film. The synopsis is: an angel sent from heaven to help a desperately frustrated businessman by showing him what life would have been like if he had never existed. And again, this stars Jimmy Stewart, and Jimmy he crushed that role.
He really did.
The thing that I love about Jimmy Stewart is that he's like an everyman's man. Like, you know, he's almost like the Tom Hanks of his generation.
Absolutely.
Where like you can just relate to him. He seems relatable. He was just a phenomenal actor. And so in this film, he gets it. And I love the way he delivers lines, all that kind of stuff. So I think we're going to analyze a couple of scenes. The first scene that we're going to check out is one of your favorite scenes from the film, in which George is actually talking to Clarence. Clarence is the angel, and George is Jimmy Stewart.
Are you sure this is Bailey Park?
No, I'm not sure of anything anymore. All I know is this should be Bailey Park. But where are the houses?
We weren't here to build them. Your brother, Harry Bailey, broke through the ice and was drowned at the age of 9.
That's a lie. Harry Bailey went to war. He got the Congressional Medal of Honor. He saved the lives of every man on that transport.
Every man on that transport died. Harry wasn't there to save them because you weren't there to save Harry. You see, George, you really had a wonderful life. Don't you see what a mistake it would be to throw it away?
All right, and that was a scene from It's a Wonderful Life when George and Clarence are in the cemetery. So, Mom, why is that one of your favorite scenes?
I think that's one of my favorite scenes because we all go through hard times in life. And sometimes you just wonder, why am I here? And it really answers that question. Each person's life affects another person's life, and if you take yourself out of the equation, life changes. Life is different. And so I think it just shows you how important your existence is, not just for yourself, but for the whole collective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with you. I think the way that, this script is amazing. And not only that, I think that the shots that Frank Capra chooses are just exquisite as well. But, you know, as he's in the cemetery, you kind of got that music that's a little bit eerie.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is kind of supplementing and reinforcing how if or since George wasn't there, he wasn't able to save his brother.
Right. And it's that one line. No. You weren't there to save Harry, so Harry wasn't there to save all those men on that transport. That's mm-hmm. the line that gets me every time.
Exactly. And I think it just goes to show, like you said, how, wow, you know, just that one little stone going into a pond and it has a ripple effect.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I enjoy that scene. I think the scene that I wanted to talk about, one that's kind of like my favorite, and honestly, it's just right at the end in terms of It's a Wonderful Life. After he's been through, you know, the structure of the film is just amazing because in the beginning, you just see how he works really hard, how he has sacrificed his dreams for other people. And then, you know, he goes on this little journey and experience with Clarence. And right at the end, it's kind of that wrap up in terms of, you know, all the lessons learned. And so I just love it because it's so funny. Like he's praying and he's like, look, I want to live again. I want to live again.
Clarence! Clarence! Help me, Clarence! Get me back! Get me back! I don't care what happens to me! Get me back to my wife and kids! Help me, Clarence, please! Please! I want to live again! I want to live again. I want to live again. Please, God, let me live again. Hey, George! George! You all right? Hey, what's the matter?
Now get out of here, Bert, or I'll hit you again. Get out of here.
What the Sam Hill you yelling for, George?
You...
George, Bert, do you know me?
Know you?
You kidding? I've been looking all over town trying to find you. I saw your car piled into that tree down there, and I thought maybe you... Hey, your mouth's bleeding. Are you sure you're all right?
What you...
My mouth's bleeding, Bert! My mouth's bleeding!
Zuzu's pedals! Zuzu!
There they are! Bert! What do you know about that? Merry Christmas!
And in some ways, as you said, it makes you grateful, right? You could list out all the things, the blessings that you're grateful for in terms of just being alive. And he realizes it and he tastes it. And man, the way that Jimmy Stewart just runs through the town saying Merry Christmas to everybody. Would you look at that? Zuzu's petals.
Yeah. You wonderful old building and loan.
Exactly. Oh man, in the scene where we're tracking him as he's actually running through and, you know, waving at everyone, it really just kind of encapsulates, you know, how you gotta take a little bit of time just to look around and be grateful for everything around you. And once he gets home, you know, the guys from the bank are there. They're ready to arrest him. And he's like, hey, cool, you can arrest me. In 1 second, let me just say hello to, you know, my kids. Then he grabs that little knob on the stairwell and it comes up. And it's just like, oh, he's so excited that things are back to the way they are, even though it's probably the worst time in his life. And then once we go into how his wife has basically gotten everybody that, you know, he has touched in his life, and they come with money. Like, you know, this is crowdfunding.
Right.
early crowdfunding. When, you know, everybody drops off some money so that they can he can be able to, you know, meet the gap and the deficit. And then one of the funniest lines, I think only because, I mean, you used to crack up at it all the time, was when, what's her name, comes in and she said, I was saving it for my husband.
There goes. If I had one.
Right.
Oh, I've been saving this money for a divorce if ever I get a husband.
Oh man. So yeah, it is just a heartwarming scene because you're seeing how it's almost like Mr. Holland's Opus, but you know, this one came first, but you're just seeing how all the different lives that he has impacted, they come back to him and, you know, they're able to just help him to get on his feet. So yeah, It's a Wonderful Life is a movie that, folks, you should definitely check out if you have not seen it.
But you didn't talk about Zuzu's Petals.
What about Zuzu's Petals?
That was your favorite line.
I did say that, though. I said it just now. That was one of my favorite lines. I just think the way that Jimmy Stewart says it is funny.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know when I'm going to do this, but I really wanted to either write an article or a book or something. People probably don't care about a book, but an article at least on how fatherhood has changed the way that I look at movies. And, you know, films like this where he just, you can tell, and I connect with his relationship with Zuzu.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even when he was all upset and annoyed by the kids, he went into Zuzu's room and she was sick. And, like, you could just see that father-daughter connection that was really pretty incredible. And so, yeah, I do want to do that eventually, just because I think that it's one thing when you see a relationship on the screen, but then it's another thing when you can identify with that same relationship. So certain films that, like, before had an impact on me, but, like, now actually being a father, it just, it's like, oh my goodness,
3D,
yeah. Makes so much more sense. All right, so we're gonna take a quick break. Folks, you're listening to Picture Rock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with my mom, Charlotte Sampson. We're going to listen to some promos. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for listening to Picture Lock Podcast, guys. I'm always trying to find great deals on cool things that I can offer you, as you know. And with Picture Lock, Loot Crate is offering an opportunity to save 10% on any new subscription at lootcrate.com. Well, what is Loot Crate, you ask? Loot Crate is a monthly mystery crate for geeks, gamers, and fans of pop culture, delivering cool and often exclusive items like collectibles, t-shirts, home goods, and more directly to your door every month. What makes Loot Crate so awesome to me is instead of getting my new graphic tees from the store each month, for the same price or less, I can get cool apparel from my favorite TV shows, movies, games, and more.
And if you got a little more to shell out, you can get even bigger and better items. No matter what you pay per month, the value of the crate is usually more, so it's a win-win. You're going to search through the rack or shelves anyway. Let Loot Crate do it for you and throw a little curveball in there for you. To save 10% on any new subscription, go to trylootcrate.com/picturelock. Again, that's trylootcrate.com/picturelock to save 10% on any new subscription. Enter promo code BRIDGE10 for 10% savings. Ride sharing is all the rave these days. Wherever you're headed, count on Lyft for rides and minutes. Whether you're riding solo or with friends, with Lyft, you've got options. Get picked up by one of their drivers who will get you where you need to go. When the ride ends, just pay and rate your driver through your phone. It's quick, it's easy, and just a couple taps away. Visit Lyft.com for more details. And if you haven't tried Lyft yet, but want to give it a whirl with a $50 ride credit, sign up at Lyft.com/invited/picturelockshow. That's right. If you're a new member to Lyft and in an eligible market, you can get a $50 ride credit with Picture Lock. Again, that's Lyft.com/invited/picturelockshow for a free $50 ride credit.
Hey, this is Tim Gordon, president of the Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association. You guys are listening to Kevin Sampson on Picture Lock.
Hi, I'm Rob Meyer, director of Little Boxes.
I'm Annie Howell, writer of Little Boxes.
And you are listening to Picture Lock.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, and I have my mom in the hot seat with me this week.
It's hot, folks.
We're talking movies and our family and all that good stuff. She's in town, so this is an excellent opportunity for us to just have a little bit of bonding time. And speaking of bonding time, I think one of the things that I remember from growing up is movies was one of the ways that we bonded because, you know, you were a big fan of like Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah.
And so I think you had put me on to some of the older films. And I do remember that when I actually went to school and started studying films, you know, I could come back and we could watch things like Citizen Kane together and other black and whites. So I do appreciate you instilled that in me. But yeah, that was kind of some of the fun things growing up. And I think that's a way that we did get to bond. And so I did kind of just want to talk a little bit about the importance of, I think, parent and child relationships and bringing in things like that. You know, was that something that you had actually thought about, you know, as during the time, hey, let's watch this movie together? Or was it just, hey, we're going to watch this movie together? Or did you realize that? And granted, I get it. Like, you didn't realize, oh, my son's going to be a film critic one day and all this stuff. But, you know, were you excited? Because for me, like with Ella and KJ, as you know, like, I love introducing them to movies. And they can't get old enough soon enough for me to really get into the good stuff. But, you know, when we go see Captain Underpants and they give their reviews on the show and stuff like that, it's fun. So, yeah, I'm interested in that.
Well, I think for me, I'll go back to my grandparents once again. We had a black and white TV, but, you know, back then we might watch 1 hour of TV in the evening. But it was a new thing. For us, it was more fun to sit around the table and let Grandpa tell us stories from his childhood and things that happened when he was growing up. So it was storytelling at its best to me. And then, of course, I grew up and I started getting more involved with the movies and things like that. So I was able to give that to you. But I have to go back to my grandfather. He was the best storyteller ever, I really think. And I think that just led into my enjoyment of stories in general.
You know, it's really interesting because as I listen to different podcasts and different things, one thing that seems to reign true is that just as human beings, right, we we're storytellers.
Yes.
And there's something in us that you want to tell good stories. And, you know, this is from the beginning of the time, whether it's cavemen painting on, exactly. you know, on a wall. And back at that, in that time, obviously you had to tell stories to pass things down because it wasn't written down other than, like, you know, like I said, drawing on the wall. Even nowadays, if you go to a party or, you know, you have people over, you know, as you're talking and people start telling a story, you know, you get wrapped up in what they're saying. And the best ones, like, you're all engaged. Now, you know, sometimes, and I don't know if you notice this, but sometimes I know when, like, okay, get back to your story, or, you know, you're kind of botching this,
right.
you know. But it's one of those things where it's interesting how we do enjoy telling stories. What made your grandfather's stories so good?
Oh my goodness, he was a musician, so he had a lot of theatrics in his blood, and he would get up and act things out and dance it out, you know. And he was just really a very likable guy. You know, you remind me a lot of him.
Well, thank you.
You really do. He was able to scare you by telling you about all the walks through the graveyards and those kind of hanks and spooky stories.
What is a hank?
A hank is, I never figured it out, but it's something between life and death that happened and that he saw as he walked through the graveyard. But he would tell those stories, but also he would tell the stories of his mother and remembering her right before she passed on. So there were a lot of things that he shared with me about his history and his growing up after his family was deceased that stuck with me. So
And on top of that, he had an interesting story, right?
He really did.
Because if you can briefly, really quick, like, he was the only person to survive.
Right. He was my sole survivor, as I say, you know. He grew up in Arkansas during the time of a smallpox epidemic, and his mother, father, he had brothers that were older than him that were twins, and sisters that were older than him, they were twins also. They all died. And he related to us that he remembered the day that his mom went crawling down the hill to get water from the stream, crawled back up to the house, put it there, and actually died in front of him. He remembers her dying. But he was the only one that survived because he did not drink the water.
Mm.
And when I later researched the whole epidemic, that was the way that it spread through the water.
Wow.
Right.
And how old was he when that happened?
He was about 3 years old, you know, and he was born before the turn of the century, 1899. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
You know, in part, I'm doing this because holding this for posterity, that's always an amazing story to me. Okay, so one of the things that I think we enjoy doing usually when we get together is, you know, we watch TV or we watch some kind of a movie. And over the years, you know, as I've left the house and gotten married and stuff like that, that's one thing that we can always come back to. You know, we were talking earlier this morning, you were talking to KJ about how we watched Iron Man 3 together.
Yeah.
And so let's talk a little bit about that. But, you know, you saw the latest from Tom Cruise. Now, folks, Tom Cruise, I think, has a special place in my mom's heart because for some reason, Top Gun was one of the VHSs that were always playing on repeat. I think that's why I have an affinity for that film as well. And really the soundtrack. But you were the first person that put me on to the fact that Tom Cruise runs
in every single movie. And he did it in The Mummy. He did. It was early on in the movie. The Mummy.
So, I take it you didn't really care for it.
No, I did not care for it. Actually, when it ended and there's a scene where he could die, and I'm like, kill him for being in this movie. Yeah, it was bad. It was really bad.
Yeah, you know, Richie Winsler, who is writing for Picture Lock, What's up, Richie? Thanks, man. He said this is another film where Tom Cruise can outrun, outswim, outgun you. Which, you know, at this point in his life and career, I think it's really awesome that he can still, like, run and do all his own stunts.
That's true.
You know, now, The Mummy, I haven't seen it yet. But, you know, the Mission Impossible films and things like that, I always am excited to see it. And it's funny because, you know, people talk about him in terms of his personal life. But on the screen, like, this guy is still dynamic. You're willing to go for the ride with him. And so you did hear that they're going to be doing a Top Gun 2.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he kind of confirmed it in an interview this year. And I think they're going to be starting production pretty soon here, so...
I'll go to see that one for old time's sake.
Right, exactly. All right, so are there any films out or that are coming out that you're really enjoying? Or I know one thing that you enjoy, TV, Queen Sugar.
Queen Sugar is back.
Pretty
yes.
Little Liars. Did I just out you?
You outed me, son. Yes, I am a big fan of the Pretty Little Liars series. This is the last season, and next week is actually the final episode, a two-hour episode. Once again, I can tie this into family. I started watching Pretty Little Liars when Ella was born. And remember, you guys said, oh, we're going to get rid of cable. We don't want her watching a lot of TV. And so I was there for a few months caring for the baby while Alex was getting back to work. And basically, I searched through Netflix to find something I could watch. And I don't know why. It just stood out to me. I started watching it, and I have followed it. 7 seasons.
That's a long time. And, you know, it's at the point where I do remember when you first started doing that, when you were watching it. And I guess, were you playing catch up at that time? Because 7 seasons.
Exactly.
Okay. So you were playing catch up at the time. And so we kind of first, I think I watched maybe the first season with you. But now at this point, because it came on last night as we're recording this on Wednesday. So it came on a Tuesday night. And, you know, I was like, I thought this person was dead. I thought, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, it's sometimes I don't either, but it has really, in some ways, I really would commend the writers because I followed a lot of the blogs and people were saying, oh, the writers, they didn't know this from the beginning. They didn't plan this. And towards the end, I can see how it has all woven together, and they hid a lot of things from us, but now it really does come together, and things are coming full circle for everyone.
So you would recommend people check it out?
Of course I would recommend it.
One thing that I wanted to ask you about, because I think it's interesting, is how we see social media integrating in film and TV and the way that we consume things. So Gary Vaynerchuk, this is one of the guys that I listen to a lot, and I like him. He's really forward thinking, but he just talks about how, you know, our cell phones are kind of the remote control of our life, and how now, you know, before, if so, I remember this when I was growing up, Boy Meets World, TGIF, all that stuff, I used to love it, right? And I wrote letters to, yeah, I did. You don't remember this?
I don't remember this.
Ryder Strong. I wrote letters to all these folks just to say, hey, I'm a big fan, blah, blah, blah. And I'd send it off. But now with Twitter, with Instagram, with all this stuff, you can actually interact with your favorite celebrity or character. And so I know with Pretty Little Liars, they have a huge social media following.
Exactly.
And their fans are actually, you know, really involved. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, they were the first show that you could actually tweet live during the show. And I remember I got a few tweets on a couple seasons ago.
Whoop-de-whoop.
And yeah, and actually... one that I'm most proud of is in the end of season five, when we found out who A was. That day I was watching the Twitter feeds, and they were asking for, you know, our opinion. What do we think? And I said, I can't wait to see what CeCe Drake has to do with all of this. And the writers, they started following me. And I was like, whoa! And of course, she was A. So I had figured that one out. That felt really good.
All right. Spoiler alert. Well, whatever.
That was a few seasons ago.
So. Oh, okay. Good. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with my mom about film, life, and TV. So we talked about Queen Sugar. I can't wait for, the second season just started. And so what I was going to say is, Tim Gordon, he's actually the founder of the Black Reel Awards and the president of the Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association. I serve as one of the people that vote for the Black Reel Awards, excuse me. And so he just opened up a TV branch. And so I'm really excited because, just voted on some of our favorite shows. I'm not going to say who and what I voted for, but Queen Sugar is right in there, as well as one of my favorite shows from last season was Atlanta. But talk a little bit about Queen Sugar and, why that's a special show to you, and I'll talk about that myself.
Well, I know, first of all, just the relationship with that we have with New Orleans and that area just brings us right into the series as it begins in the Ninth Ward
right there
in New Orleans. But I just love the actors. I think they're really, they have a great ensemble cast. It took me a long time to figure out who Aunt Vi was. I knew I had seen her in something, and I had to just rack my brain. But do you know she was in the Temptations movie, the TV movie?
Mm-hmm.
She was the mother of one of the Temptations, the one that told the story. Yeah, and she ended up having cancer at the end of the movie, and that just pulled me in, just realizing that fact. I think that they had just some strong writing also for the series.
Yeah, no, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I was really looking forward to seeing it because I love Ava DuVernay.
Yes.
And so when it said she was branching into TV, I was like, oh, man, I know this is going to be good because she crafts really well-told stories about black people. I just knew it was going to be phenomenal acting and great cinematography. And I think that's really what stands out to me about the show is the acting is just phenomenal. And this is a show in which you just get to see some characters of color really kind of go at it. It's good, juicy, meaty roles. And they all have their own flair that they bring to the character. And they're well-rounded characters. Not necessarily like they're all good people,
right. But
they're a fully fleshed out character. And so I also enjoy, kind of the story of family and coming together and how sometimes, like, you might be at odds, but that's my sister.
Right.
That's my brother.
Right.
And that really comes through. And not only that, kind of it's interesting because as we've been having this conversation, you can kind of see how, their family history affects where they are. And then it also affects what they are striving to do. I think it's a really good show, and I enjoyed it.
Well, as they say, art imitates life. I have seen the first episode of season 2, and once again, that rings true as we bring in the new season with Queen Sugar. You will see some things that really show what's going on in the world today for us.
Mm. All right. Well, Mom, this has been a really fun, exciting conversation.
It has been. Things have come back to mind that I have forgotten about for years and years. So I thank you for getting me in the chair and miking me up to share this time with you.
Thank you for coming on. Thanks for sharing those stories. And we might have to do a part 2.
Part 2. Let's do it.
All right. So usually at the end I say, and where, how can people find you online, social media? I love it. She looked at me like I'm crazy. All right, Mom. Tell everybody bye.
All right. Bye, everybody.
That's all for this episode. I'd like to thank my guest, my mom, Charlotte Sampson, for coming on the show. Be sure to check out picturelockshow.com for what to see at the movies this weekend. You can find Picture Lock on Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, Pinterest, and Periscope. That's a lot of stuff. All social media is at Picture Lock Show. Watch back episodes of the TV show at youtube.com/picturelockshow. You can download the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio, and other places podcasts are downloaded. Feel free to give the show a hearty review if you're enjoying it. Filmmakers, make sure you get your work into the DC Black Film Festival, showcasing quality film, web series, and television content by and about people of African descent. Call for submissions is now open. We are entering the last week. June 30th is the late deadline. So hurry on over to dcbff.org for details on how to submit and to get information on the showcase, which will take place August 17th through 19th in Southeast Washington, D.C. Don't forget to check out the website, picturelockshow.com, for movie reviews, news, and to subscribe to our newsletter to get a chance to win tickets for movie screenings in the DMV. I just ran a contest for Resident Evil Vendetta. And then also, it was a, now I really can't say it, Okja, I think is how you pronounce it. It's a Netflix original that is dropping very soon, but you would have been able to see it first had you subscribed to the newsletter, as I sent all the subscribers the pass to be able to get in and check out the film. So make sure you head on over there and subscribe to the newsletter. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, you can fill out the form on the website. Drop me a line if you're enjoying the show as well at picturelockshow@gmail.com. Our music is done by Mike S. The Prophet 13. Thanks, bro. I'm Kevin Sampson, and until next time, I hope you stay locked on film.